Hi, this is Dave Schwartz, and welcome to my podcast for PaceMakesTheRace.com. We're going to do so. I have a guest that's been on several times in the past, and Mark David. And Mark and I are going to do something a little different today. Mark is going to interview me. He's going to ask me questions, and so, and I've given him a list, like, you know, how old am I? How did I get so handsome? You know, questions like that. I'm not sure. I didn't see him writing any of those down, so there's no telling what he's going to ask.
This isn't going to be a Fantasy Island, though, one.
Okay, to plane. So without further ado, here's Mark David, and he's interviewing me. Go.
Okay, so Dave, you know, when I first, encountered you on Facebook and whatnot, and probably through Derek, if I remember correctly, you were the Horse Handicapping Authority, is that correct?
Yes, that was our former website.
Right, and as I understand it, your main way of handicapping races, maybe still is, but was at that point, that speed is the determining, the biggest factor.
Oh no, not for me. Speed, my core handicapping, the public, I think, uses a lot of speed, and indirectly, speed plays a part. But my core handicapping relies on basically three things. The trainer, pace handicapping, meaning pace models and pace profiles, and some high-level factors that could probably best be described as the best horses get pushed to the top, if that makes sense.
Okay, so my question is, you know, now you're called Pace Makes the Race,
yes.
Right? Right, so as someone who has handicapped for a long time, standardbreds, but I know enough about thoroughbreds to do it that way too, how do you, of course we all get that pace can make the race, because if the leaders battle, the closers can come. If the leaders back the speed down, they can speed up and pace away from the back ones when they're coming and they don't gain on them. We all get that. But how do you figure out, with your system or the way you're doing it, the models that predict what might happen?
Boy, I think that's a fantastic question. The reason it's such a great question is I think most people are doing it in a very 1980s way. In other words, you know, when we look at pace handicapping as it was done in the days of Howard Sarton, and Howard Sarton, it was through him I began to win, okay? But Howard and Tom Brohammer and Dick Schmidt all believed in pace models that were what I call positional models. And specifically, the biggest issue was, where are the winners coming from at the second call? And we've kind of tossed that model out the window. Again, it's very 1980s. So what we actually do, and understand the purpose of software is to make life easier, to produce reports and so forth, and of course to test things. So in our software, what we do is we go to the database and fetch races at this track surface and distance. So if I'm handicapping a race at Aqueduct at 6 furlongs, then I'm going to go fetch races at Aqueduct 6 furlongs. But one of the key points is it needs to have a similar amount of pace pressure as today's races do. And specifically, I use Randy Giles wrote a book called If You Doodle, They Will Come or something. And he came up with the idea of queer and early speed points and counting the points in the race, but only count the 5 point and above horses. So in other words, the horses are going to create the pace pressure. And so what we do is we go to our database, we fetch races with a similar pace profile, plus or minus 2 months of the year. So and our purpose there is we don't want to be handicapping Philly Park in December with races from July. So we try to get a lot of races. I mean, we look for like 100 races, but we'll play with like a dozen.
Okay, and there. When you say pace pressure, what do you mean exactly by that?
I actually did a video out there. Maybe it's in our, I can't remember if it was a free one, but to explain it. Okay, so basically what, the simplistic version, this is not what I do, but this is pretty close. The simplistic version is there's 4 levels of pace pressure. Level 0, which is absolutely no pace pressure in the race. No front runners at all. Of course, somebody's going to the front. Okay. Then there's a race with one not really front runner, more like a presser. And there's one of those. Then there's 2 of those. Or one of those and a pronounced front runner. And then there's what we call a 3+, which means there's at least 3 horses that are going to be going to the front, and at least one of them is a bona fide early horse. So if we had those 4 levels, if you were building a model at a 6 furlong model at Santa Anita, you'd want 4 pages, one for the 0 races, the 1s, the 2s, and the 3+.
Okay. In the standardbred game, we call the 3+ a rodeo. Right, it's like a rodeo. Everyone just runs for the front that wants the front, and they're not interested in taking back and being smart about it, or if the horse even can do something like that. And they're setting it up for the closers, right? Is that the gimmick?
No, no. They never bet up the closers. If you look at the average return on races that are won by a front runner, what you find is the prices are substantially lower. The reality is closers, it doesn't matter. The public bets early speed. Now, here's the thing about front runners versus closers. You know, I build par times, and what we found is that when you have a race that is won by a front runner, the times of the races are going to be substantially faster. So in other words, every race has a front runner. I mean, there's always somebody in the lead, even though sometimes they look like they don't want it. But, you know, the point is, the less early speed there is, the more early speed there is, the more predictable the race becomes. Therefore, if you can imagine the reverse of that being true, when the early speed fails, you get closers. And the closers can be, they win for no logical reason. And there are horses that pay big prices all the time because everybody else quit.
Right. They didn't go forward. The other ones went backwards. Basically.
Well, yes. And I couldn't even ride, you know, in the elephant races. But seriously, I have been on a thoroughbreds before. And I can tell you, I was on a three-year-old once that was fresh from the track, and it was like being on a rocket. So, sure, there is this kind of balls-to-the-wall front-runner race, but that's not what we're talking about. We're assuming that in a high pace pressure race, we're still assuming there's a degree of control by the jockeys. It's just that, you know, that race where there are three or more pronounced front runners, you can expect a relatively fast pace. Now, you know, the public is under the impression, gee, if you've got three or four front runners, then we look for a closer. I mean, they say that. But the reality is, while the pie is cut among more front runners, if you've got four front runners in a race, most of the time one of them is going to win.
Okay.
And statistics bear that out. You know, horse players, we're famous for wanting to do things our way. I know somebody's listening to this, and they said, even if you could prove it to me, and I did in a video statistically, but I got, you know, the responses I got were amazing. It was like, well, I don't care. I'm going to continue to bet closers in a four front runner race. Well, that's a losing proposition.
Okay, so presuming that your data and your theory works, which I assume it does, because you use it in
sure.
profit. So assuming that pace makes the race, and you're saying that over X amount of races, your system or your whatever data will predict the pace scenario that plays out correctly a lot of the time, and that will give you more likely contenders to play with?
It's part of the process. Okay, going, you know, Howard Sarton used to say the process for handicapping a race is to pick the contenders, to select the right pace lines, and then to, well, in that age, to interpret the readouts correctly, which eventually morphed into interpret the model. Now, so his process was pick contenders and then only consider them in the pace of the race. We do it a little bit differently. A pace, as we've said, is a major factor. So is trainer. I'll give you something interesting that we've recently discovered. Early speed horses can and should be held to a stricter standard for requirement of qualifying on other factors. And it's kind of funny because historically people have said, well, if I have an early speed horse, sometimes they just get loose on the lead and they go. Well, sure they do. But the reality is that most of those horses have something else going for them. For example, maybe they have a glow-in-the-dark buyer number about seven races back. We find almost 90% of the winners, we have a list of about five core factors, really high level. Like one is the projected speed rating from Jim Cramer's at Handicapper's Data Warehouse, which is a lot like Brisk Prime Power. So we've actually got two numbers like that, and then we've got another one that's very close to it, and then we've got a class number, and we've got an early speed number. And what we find is the great majority of winners will, if we look at the ranks in those columns, we will find that they will have two good ratings, like rank first for this and first for that, or first and second, or first and third, or second and second. A one and a four isn't good enough. A two and a three isn't good enough. So, in other words, those are big, high-level qualifying factors. We find that early speed horses have to have those qualifying factors in order to really be a threat in the race.
Would you say that thinking of it through, that the reason for that is that they have the qualifying factors that they are at least equal to or above the field, and they're an early speed horse, so you're negating trip trouble because they're making their own trip, and they've got enough legitimate ability, talent, form, whatever combination of that is in play, that they can carry it, and they're not going to have anyone get in their way or bother them, because there's only wind in front of them. There's no course backing into them or bumping them or running sideways. Or do you think that that's a big part of that?
No, I don't. I think, first of all, I'm not a trip handicapper. I recently did a podcast with Garnet Barnsdale, and he does concentrate on trip, but he does it in a little different manner. He might have a different opinion on this, but remember, I'm talking about what I'm calling predictive early speed, okay? And the reality of predictive early speed, what that means is I think the three horse is going to challenge for the lead. Well, he may very well run from off the pace today and win in the stretch. It does happen. But what we find, and where I was really going with this, is the fact that the early speed horses will always have other reasons for winning. However, when horses win from off the pace, they may not have anything else going for them. They may fit on late pace of some kind. So again, it gets back to, if you look at the logic of it, you have to accept this in order to move on to the next premise. And I did this in a video, I think it was a 2-hour video. I think it was called Understanding Early Speed. But the point is that the earlier a race runs, the more predictable it runs. Now, that means, if you can wrap your mind around that, what I'm really saying is the less early speed there is in this race, the less predictable the race would be. And in fact, in races with no early speed, and again, I'm talking about predictable speed, but it is also, at the end of the day, it is the reality of what actually happened in the race. In other words, if the front runners all fold up, you look at the end of the race, and you have this $68 horse, and you say, this horse had nothing going for him. That happens all the time.
Yes.
So if you have a race that you're convinced is going to go late, you don't hold the horses to the higher standard like you do an early race.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. All he's doing is winning by attrition, right?
That's right.
He's winning his one speed, and they're running backwards, and he just passes them by luck.
Well, they quit. In fact,
he's not running at them. They're running backwards towards him, basically.
Yes, they've given up. And I mean, we've seen it over and over again.
But, you know, he has nothing going for him, and he's not doing anything different. He's just doing his thing, and today they all did the wrong thing, let's say.
And understand, people, they don't want to get the mathematics of this, but if you think about it, okay, here's a statement. The faster that we've heard in the past, for every tick a horse goes faster early, he loses 2 ticks late, okay? Well, that's simply not true. Sure, he may not quit, but when you look at the race itself, I mean, he may quit and be all done. But when you look at race times themselves, the faster the pace of the race, the faster the final time. That's logical. And I would prove it by saying horses, you have a 6-furlong race, horses in a paceless race where they go out in 23 and 3/5 seconds don't run 108 flat. Okay. In other words, if the race is 2 seconds slow at the first call, they're not going to make it up in the stretch. Those sure, there's the three horses historically, maybe, and I don't, that's an arbitrary number, that have, like Silky Sullivan, who just kind of ran his race, but they're rare.
Right, and there's no handicapping that accounts for that type of horse in every race. I'll give you, we weren't going to talk about bias, but Garnet and I had an interesting conversation in private about a month ago, and it went something like this. It's relative to what you're saying, but it's not about pace per se. We have this thing where we don't like certain horses. I wrote the blog about that, where, you know, this horse, we hate him. She's beaten us 50 times over. We bet her, she loses. You know, one of those types that has our number, a horse that has our number. So we were having a discussion, and I picked a horse in a race that had a lot of flaws. Let's just say one of those ones that has nothing going for him that wins the race, one of those types, right? I picked that horse, and he went out of his way to tell me in public that horse had no shot, right? He said, that horse has no shot. And in private, we were discussing why he had no shot. And he said, well, he's this, and he's that, and he's that. And I said, yeah, he is all those things. Look at the rest of the field. Who's any better? Tell me who's any better than him. Okay, so I said, I can see, you know, some glimmers of talent within this horse, and I could give you 50 flaws he has also. So we had this discussion, but he had a bias against this horse that he was no good already. And so he told me he had no shot. I said, he has a shot. You'll see. I'm not saying he's the winner, you know, but if the pace goes a certain way and they do certain things and he just does his thing, he can win this race. And the race runs, the horse does his thing, which is not much, but he does his thing. And he basically sat just off the pace while the pace battlers battled. That's what they did. And then he pulled around them. He had the lead at the top of the stretch. He had the lead about 10 strides from the wire. And he just got beat right at the end by someone else. But he had a legitimate shot. He raced the way I said he would. And, you know, he got beat. I said he had a shot. I didn't say he was a cinch. And we discussed afterwards, you know, why he didn't like the horse. And I said, well, here's the thing, Garnet. You know, when you're dealing with these types of crappy, mediocre horses, you have to give a little on what you can accept for poor form to some extent, if the value and the price is right. You know, and you know, he agreed with me. He says, you know, I need to start thinking like that. I said, when they're all crappy, who's good? You know?
Well, okay, I got to tell you, my response would be very simply, I've been wrong before. You know, because I have to tell you, I toss horses all the time and I say, well, I can't see how this horse will win. But what I'm really saying is that I don't think, when I toss a horse out, I want to know, I want to feel confident that he's a bad bet. Because the goal in picking non-contenders is not just about who is likely to win the race. It's about who's likely to win the race, but you have to go deep enough, right? I mean, you know, okay, I'm not saying this well. Let me try again. The point is that if I have a race where, like, by the way, the horse that you described, that I call that an early horse. If he's stalking the leaders at the first call, and of course, thoroughbreds are a bit different than harness, but our rule of thumb is within a length at the first call. That's an early horse. Early-ish, okay? And what we have found by looking at those four kinds of pace profiles, the 0, 1, 2, and 3 plus, what's interesting is, and boy, if you're listening out there, you know, write this down. Don't take my word for it. Go test it. The 3 plus race, at the end of the day, we will find that the winner of the race will usually have challenged for the lead at the first call. The 2 front runner race, the 2 point race, they will challenge at the second call. That is the first time they get within a length. You'll look at the chart of the winner and you'll find he was at the second call making his move. If it's a 1 point race, they'll the first time they get a call, so to speak, within a length inclusive, it will be the stretch call. And if it's a 0 point race, it will come closer to the finish line. In other words, in that last furlong. And that did a lot for the confidence that we had in being able to predict. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Even if I say to you, here, we're looking at this race, 7 furlongs at Belmont Park, and I say to you, the winner in this race will take the lead or challenge for the lead 1 furlong from the wire. If I'm right, and I don't even know who's going to win the race. I'm just telling you where it's going to happen. Is it perfect? Of course not. I mean, we see closers, what we predict to be closer races, and they go wire to wire.
Right. So the one of the points would be then that pace makes the race, but it's not an absolute that will give you the winner.
Nothing is absolute.
No, but it will give you, but in some ways, the absolute part is that it will give you the legit contenders over a certain period of time statistically better than you're doing right now.
I think pace is a very important component. I mean,
prediction, right?
Yes, it's the predictive value of pace. And, you know, but that's an interesting point. When you look at the predictive value of pace versus the reality of pace, you know, I have guys that want to look at the model from the standpoint of where did the winner come from? And then I have other people that want to look at the race from the predictive standpoint. Okay, was this a 7-point Quirin horse, or was it a 3-point horse, or, you know, a mid-pack, a front runner versus a mid-pack? What we found, interestingly enough, is that a mixture of the true two works best. On the one hand, we go fetch races that are based on how they actually ran. And then, when we interpret that model, we look at it. Actually, I said that backwards. We fetch races based on the predictive early speed. But then we ask the question, well, if the horse runs at the first fraction, what makes him a winner? If he was on the lead within a length at the first call, what are the factors that predict winner? And by the way, rarely is the second call important. It has almost zero value in racing. And I know there's people that are tuning out all over the country, but that is a fact. If you look at it from where does the horse make his move? Because if you try to make your move at the second call, well, you're doing that usually by circling the field. And that horse, that's called 3-5, right? You're not getting 22-1 on a horse that's circling the field and winning and taking the lead as soon as they come out of the turn.
Not often, anyway.
No, I mean, classically speaking, the price on that horse, on that hidden fraction, as it's commonly called, the hidden fraction move is a low odds winner.
Yeah. And jockeys think like that. If they're on 22-1 track, they're not going to try it because they think he'll fail.
They don't have the horse. Yeah. I mean, the model. If you ask, what's the model of the long shot? Well, the answer is it's a late horse. It's a horse that was in the right place at the right time because everybody else gave up in the race.
Well, I think I might differ with you on that. Being a long shot player, you know, I'm not a long shot player. I'm a value player. I find more value in long shots. I'm not saying that there are. I say I find more of them. So I'm an astute long shot player because I don't view them as outsiders right off the bat like a lot of people do. I look deeper to see what I might find. You know,
but you're talking about subtle handicapping here. Remember, I'm looking at the game statistically.
And what I'm saying, what I find in that case is that long shots come from the word I'm looking for is the flip side of a bad favorite. In other words, he became a longer shot because the favorite is taking more money than he should, and he becomes longer just because he's
Yeah, I probably have to disagree with that, only because the fact that one horse became 4-5 did not make another horse 25-1. But what I would hold up as the example is that it is all about predictability, and the more predictable the race is, the lower the price you're going to get, and the earlier the race typically goes. The exception to that, of course, is the race where you have the killer class horse, who everybody knows is going to run late, and guess what? He's got the field. You look at how Arrogate ran in the World Cup, and you see that he was so much the best. And of course, that wasn't how they expected him to run that far off the pace. But that's the epitome of the example of the low odds horse that just trounces the field, whether he's close to the front end or the back end. The point being that he had so much going for him. Maybe another way to put it is, if you were to take all the all the horses that went wire to wire, and compared them to horses that won the race and never got a call till the last furlong, you will find that the average mutual is more than double on a horse, might even be closer to triple, on the horse that wins in the last furlong, on average.
Right, but you know, in Arrogate's case, if you want to characterize that, a pace doesn't make that race. Class and talent make that
race. I completely agree, and that's my point.
Where you say pace makes the race, because no matter how the race goes, how the pace goes, he's going to beat them. It doesn't matter, right, basically.
I agree. Of course, the real question, did Arrogate, and I don't want to get stuck on Arrogate, we've only got a few minutes left here, but you know, Arrogate is certainly not the classical value play. And again, I play a lot of low odds horses. To me, you know, we're running out of time. I think I want to go to, and you asked a question. I don't want you to think, when I say pace makes the race, that was in honor of Dick Schmidt and Tom Hamilton. That's why I built that site. We needed a name change because the host of our website had a systemic infection, and we had to kill the old site. We're still recovering from that, frankly. But Pace Makes the Race is a great catchy title, but it's not that one-dimensional. In fact, if you look at pure winners, trainers are going to be more powerful. You're going to get more winners in the top three or four horses. And for that matter, the jockey factor is going to produce more. Now, I don't use the jockey factor in my... The jockey in most races, is statistically a passenger. And so I'm not saying that jockeys can't win or lose races. I'm saying that they are, you don't bet a horse because he's got the best jockey on him. I mean, you know, he has to have the horse under him first. He has to have the trainer and so forth. But my point is, as you kind of said it, pace is one of the major considerations. Again, going back to Howard Sarton, pick the contenders, pick the pace lines. I don't pick pace lines. And one last thing, and I know we're running out of time. I didn't mean to dominate my own interview, but when you look at the model, this is the interesting thing. Like, when we look at what does it take to win in the first fraction, if you are a first fraction horse, that is within a length, we're not looking for what gets you to the first fraction early. We're asking the question, because that's done with running style. We're asking the question, if I am within a length at the first call, what factors point to me finishing and winding up in the winner's circle? And it is very rare that it is a pace rating like first fraction. Interesting, huh?
I would say, you know, pace makes the race is a catchy title, but the more accurate way to portray it is pace is a big factor among other factors, right?
It's a huge factor. I mean, it's a dominant factor.
It's not the only factor where you can figure out, okay, well, I've done that, so now I'm like way ahead of the game.
No.
That's step A. Now I go to step B and say, okay, if this is the pace that I predict, these are the contenders that have what it takes to benefit from
yes.
that scenario, right?
Yes, sure.
So sure. That's a very simple thing that the average guy can do. If he can figure out what the pace is going to be, then he can look at the other horse to say, okay, here's four horses. Who benefits the most and who do I get value on if I play them?
Well, yeah, the one place you and I differ there, and I emphasize this, while we do look at who is likely to we don't look at today's pace and say, gee, we have to look at a late pace profile. Every race ultimately boils down to early versus late. The question is only what is our definition of early? What is our definition of late? And of course, early is always the first fraction. If we say late, do we mean deep stretch or do we mean, you know, stretch call like one furlong from the wire, or do we mean deep stretch like in the inside the last furlong? And so the reality for us, what shows statistically, is that the races that are won in the last furlong were won, like we said, because nobody else was there. And so we do not require the contenders that we pick to qualify on anything else if they have the late run. Just the opposite of what the public thinks. The public thinks early horses can just win on the front end, period. And we're saying, no, that's a highly predictable race, and therefore they must have the other factors going with them. Conversely, the less predictable the race is, we just want to know who's running late. That's all we want to know. Who's got the running style and who fits the factors that point to a late winner. Not the we've got running style separate. So the bar is very low. And that's why when we cash the long shots, and sometimes we just, you can't get them. You can't get them all. But we've had some amazing hits. We don't think they're going to win. We think they might win.
Right. And, you know, I mentioned this to you before, but I'm moving to the thoroughbreds because they give you rolling doubles. And in harness, there is no track that does that. Not one. Not one track that gives me a rolling double. And the reason that I want that, I'd stick to harness if they did that, but they refuse. They will not give you a rolling double. And the reason that I want that is basically the point you're making here. Is that, okay, I don't know which of the five that are running late are going to win, and I don't care. As long as they're all going to be value horses, I'll take them all, and I've got half my double covered right there. I don't want to do it in four races in a row. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. But I want to have the choice of revolving my double around the race where I can take as many as I want to cover that pace scenario playing out for me. That's the only reason I would do it that way.
But, you know, multi-race play is different than single-race play. And so, personally, I'm not a multi-race player. And the reason I'm not is that one of my biggest advantages is being able to discern value based on the mix of horses in the race. And that does include things like the late scratches. And I don't use the tote board. I could, but I don't. But I think we have to cut it off here because I'm running out of time. And so, Mark, this was a great idea of yours. I think we maybe want to do this again sometime. But I thank you again for being on, and thank you for moderating this. And I think we'll just say goodbye, folks. Have some winners.